your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.
Welcome back to Nerds from the Crypt, where the nerds look at your favorite and sometimes not so favorite horror movies. We also invite horror creators to come on and talk about their current and upcoming horror projects. Once again, I want to thank all of you for being so patient as we work to get the new episodes out. We have several interviews coming up talking about some of the very interesting and exciting projects. And this one being one of those, one of the episodes that I've been waiting for to get to release for y'all to listen to. Now, if you are an indie creator that would like to come on to the podcast and talk about your projects, you can contact us over on social media at NerdsFTC on what used to be Twitter, now called X, but also on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. You can also email us at nerdsftc@gmail.com. For today's episode, we'll be talking to Ray Ramos and Oliver Lee Arce. They're here to talk about Kryptonols, their 148-page black and white graphic novel that brings together cryptids, Mesoamerican deities, Lovecraftian horror, and creepypasta characters. Kryptonols was written by Ray Ramos and illustrated by Dario Rodriguez. And we're not only going to be talking about the about Kryptonols, we're going to be also talking about legends that inspired the characters in the book, but also we're going to be going over some personal supernatural stories that we have experienced. So stick around for the full episode. Let us know what you think. If you've read the book, tell us what you think about the book. But also let us know if you've heard of these stories or if you have experienced some of these stories. Let's go ahead and jump into that interview right now. I want to go ahead and introduce Mr. Ray Ramos. How are you doing today, sir?
How's everybody doing?
And Mr. Oliver Arce, how are you doing today,
sir? Hey, man. Thank you for the invite, and you pronounced my last name correctly, so that's a big win. That's a big win. They usually say Acre or Acer or Arky. Yeah, dude, it's Arky, dude. Arky. Yeah, Arky. I think it was somebody did an unboxing of our latest book, and that's how they pronounced my last name, Arky. Oh, it's all really Arky. What the hell,
Mr. Arky?
Anyway, Saul, thank you for having us, man. It's I'm sure it's gonna be a good time here hanging out with you.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I'm sure it will.
I'm glad Oliver jumped the gun and said thank you first. So that's cool. Thank you so much, Saul, and thank you for reaching out. And I hope you enjoy what you're reading. So,
oh yeah, definitely. As soon as I saw the cover, and I saw what it was about, I'm like, oh, I gotta have this, because for those of you who saw the cover art for the podcast, right? But it's a how do you say the name? That's what I'm having more trouble with.
everybody has trouble with that. It's supposed to be a joint name of criminals and cryptids, because you know, people look at cryptids like monsters, so they're criminals, right? So it's Kryptonols.
Okay. I wasn't sure how to say. I was trying to say like the Chippendales or something like that.
Oh, like Chippendales. Well, that too.
What? You know,
the man dog has a long sordid history, so maybe he was a Chippendales dancer. You never know. It's possible.
But before we go into what I was saying is that when I saw the name, and then I'm like, oh, it's creepypasta and cryptids. I'm like, one of my two favorite things. And so I need to make sure to get you all on here. But awesome. Before we jump in too much into that, I want to let our audience get to know you all a little bit. Do you want to share a little bit about yourselves?
Sure. So like my name says, it's Ray Ramos. We also have a stream called Streaming with 6x6 Comics, and usually I go by the moniker Happy Harry Hard On, which is a throwback to Pump Up the Volume. It's a movie from the 80s. But I've been writing comics for more than 20 years, ever since high school, and just that's my love of expression, I guess you could say, is comic books, writing in general as well, but also poetry, you know. So I try to dabble in every aspect as far as writing and literature is concerned, and I just miss good comics. I miss stuff that was just, you know, an escape. And that's something that we're trying to bring back as far as our book is concerned. And I mean that's pretty much it. I mean, you can find me in all the social medias if you want to listen to all my rants and raves. But I'm mostly here for the passion of making good comics and having people like you, Saul, enjoy them.
Awesome. How about yourself, Oliver?
Oliver Lee Arce, co-founder of 656 Comics. That's the studio that worked on the Kryptonals, published by Black Tooth Comics, by the way. And I've been doing comics since I can remember, man. I've been drawing since I was a kid, but like professionally doing comic books, I was around 15. I worked at the local paper, and that's how my passion began. I was into comics way younger, but when my first gig was in the local paper, and that snowballed and opened up a studio, found friends that knew how to draw, write, and all that, and here we are right now, dude, publishing our books and talking with you, man, today. So
the interesting thing about Oliver and about 656 in general is that they're in Juarez. They're based out of Juarez.
Oh, that's true.
during
I forgot to mention that.
When I first met them, they were the only group of I guess comequeros, if you want to call them that, people that make comics, that made Western styled comics, because everything that is going on, I guess, or was going on during the time in south of the border, their comic books were not Westernized, and I think that was one of the draws for me when I first met them. And it took me a long time to actually break into their ranks, because they wouldn't let me, play in their sandbox.
You didn't want to, man. You were your own man.
Yeah, whatever.
You were your own man.
so that's a big draw as far as 656 is concerned. 656 stands for the area code of Juarez, and a lot of the books that I can say we now, because I'm an official member, right? A lot of the books that we publish are more border based stuff that's going on the border between El Paso, because I'm based in El Paso and Juarez, and we try to just put the spotlight on certain things that are passed over as far as not just mainstream comics, but mainstream media in general, so people get an actual idea of what's really, really going on, between the border of the U.S. and Mexico.
And we coined the term border horror, right, Ray?
Yes, we coined the term border horror because a lot of our stories have that tinge of horror, especially the type of horror that we've experienced on the border.
So you're from the 656. I'm from the 956.
Nice.
Awesome. So I guess they put 56 as for the border towns or border areas.
I guess so. No, that's true. Also, Ray forgot to mention that we're upon our 20th anniversary next year. So that's really big for us.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
And we deal with horror, vigilantism, anti-heroes, and all that stuff, man. We're kind of jaded, no, Ray? Because border life is not very sunshine and rainbows.
I mean, when I came into this, when you guys were doing your books, that's when all the violence was going on in Juarez, especially, man. Juarez seemed to be I remember during that time, El Paso, well, this is the weird dichotomy, Saul. El Paso was ranked either the number two or number one safest city in the United States. And at the same time, right across the border, an imaginary line, Juarez was ranked the most dangerous city on the face of the planet. It was crazy.
So yeah, I remember reading about that a while back, actually. So,
So that's kind of where we, that's why I guess Solis says we're kind of jaded, because it's like to see the two sides and nobody really experiences it unless you live here, that was kind of something that we wanted to bring to the forefront. But at the same time, delving into that world and trying to, to make it actually true to the original, facts and everything, that was when we started realizing American comics has it really good. These guys are trying to make comics in a war zone, literally, while over here people are complaining about stupid things well, to me anyway, like very, very trivial things about like, oh, well, he's not wearing the right suit or his origin story isn't correct. And over here, these guys are like, hey, do you know that women are being kidnapped and murdered in Mexico? Do you know about that? Like, that's the type of stuff that we were writing about.
Yeah. And well, where I grew up, that area didn't really have that issue, but I used to go to Querétaro in Mexico.
Oh, okay. Oh,
wow. With my family.
Yeah.
And we used to do that on a yearly basis, like twice a year during the summer and during the Christmas break, you know, every year. But I graduated in 2003, and I think around 2004 or 2005 was the last time that I actually went down on a constant basis. Started working, you know, life got in the way. But then all of a sudden, that's when you started hearing the stories of, you know, the cartel really starting to take over. Not really the border towns here where I grew up, but but deeper into Mexico. And we were hearing a lot more things as far as, like, you know, if we would go in buses or we would go in our vehicle. Those are the areas that were getting stopped. So I haven't dealt with the actual violence itself. I've heard a lot, but from my family in Mexico.
And Querétaro was relatively safe, no? It's kind of like, I never heard about like anything like news coming from that place of Mexico that Querétaro has suffered any cartel violence or maybe they're keeping it under wraps, right? But yeah, I've been to Querétaro a few times for conventions. They did the Conque there, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was the last Stan Lee appearance in that convention, by the way.
Oh, really?
So that's, yeah, we got a chance to meet him there. And yeah, man, Querétaro, I've heard that it's pretty nice, no? I don't know your experience there.
No, yeah, for the most part, we've never had any issues. Lately, we've heard more stories of that they are starting to get affected. Mm. But not to the point where you hear everywhere else. It's more like one or two people are caught doing this or that, or something happens because they were trying to mess with the wrong people, you know. So far, luckily, we haven't heard anything where it's like a whole neighborhood that gets gunned down or whatever like that.
See, and that's the thing. So like the dichotomy, like I was saying about it, like on this side of the border, when I met these guys, I never experienced any of that. Because everything was, you know, sweet and innocent over here. Well, I mean, as best as it could be in El Paso. And these guys, like, every day, literally, they were struggling to survive. They were struggling not to lose their lives. Very recently, I remember, and Oli can tell you this story. He was doing a stream or something. Actually, this was like a year and a half ago, I guess. And there was gunfire like outside.
Yeah, it was during the lockdowns. Actually, I was streaming. We were promoting a book with other creators, and it was actually my first time like on stream and talking about my work, no, my situation, where it come from, and then yeah, that was the cue for a gun battle outside my house. So we just I don't know if the audience caught it, but yeah, it was a lot of gunshots like AK-47s or AR-15s going out outside my neighborhood, and yeah, it was just like, hey, what? Hey, whenever I'm on the street, this is what you're gonna get, guys.
Pretty much, man, and that's the thing. Like a lot of streams that we're on, you know, they're not based in Texas, they're more east or more, you know, to the north, and they trip out because we talk about this like, oh yeah, it's a whatever thing, and they can't seem to grasp the concept. And it wasn't until recently that a lot of creators that we're kind of friends with, more Oliver than I am, they came down to visit because they were having a book fair, and they got to experience it for themselves, and it was really a big eye-opener for them as far as, you know, the stuff that we do and the stuff that we try to convey, you know, to the audience and stuff.
I mean, they didn't experience violence, right? Because it was pretty chill.
Yeah, exactly. You kept them safe.
Yeah, but they experienced like life, no, on the border, like how people get by daily, and I mean, it was quite fun.
So before we get into the project we're going to talk about today, you know, you were briefly talking about another project you had done before. Y'all want to talk about past projects?
Sure, we can dip into those as well. We've been, like I said, we've been doing books for a very long time, 6x6 longer than I have with them collaborating. So if you want to talk about that, Oliver, a little
bit. I mean, we could talk about the last couple of projects we crowdfunded, because that's more like relevant work right now. We, during the pandemic, we started delving into the crowdfunding scene, right? Because there was a lot of like surges, no? Is that the word? Like resurgence, or I mean, yeah. People were like, "Hey, man, the mainstream is not like giving us what we want, so let's just do mm-hmm. what we do. Let's get this these books out there ourselves." And yeah, there was a crowdfunding boom. What was it? 2019, 2020, more or less. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we decided to, hey, well, let's get into it. No, let's translate one of these books and hope for the best. So we launched Undead Border, Escape or Die. That's our zombie book. It's like what if there's an outbreak, a zombie outbreak here in the borderland, and that's kind of like our pitch, and people kind of dug it, and we released that. We made how many? Like we got like five grand, more or less.
Yeah, so that was like five grand. That's the one that that I had mentioned to you, Saul, in the green room, about how I had presented it to Romero when he was still around.
That's true.
And he was very, very impressed with it. He was like, wow, why didn't I think of that? So it took.
And yeah, you were telling me about that, and I was like, man, you know, I'm actually, that, and out of all the stories that I read, especially, and we'll get into this one because there's some cryptids and there's some monsters in here that I'm familiar with, mm-hmm. that I grew mm-hmm. up with. So that really draws me in. So anything that has to do with like life on the border, or you know, going into Mexico or something like that, it's always gonna draw me in because I know that life, I know that how it is. So
yes, that
brings you in,
and that's actually like why we do it, no? Because it's something that it's never seen. I mean, mm-hmm. people from overseas, especially the Europeans, they come over and they do books about Juarez or the murders and all that. And I mean, it's cool and all, but you're not getting the full story. You don't live here, guys. So it's it's kind of like, I want to say half-assed, because that's kind of like disrespectful, but it's not a complete, you're not offering the complete experience to the reader. But yeah, man, I mean, so yes, Undead Border, Escape or Die, that's like, what if there's a zombie outbreak here in Juarez, and how people react to it, and it's like kind of like a comparison with the cartel wars, no, Ray? It's how people live and adapt to this violence in the street, because you still gotta go to work, no? You still gotta go pay the bills, put food on the table.
That's the thing that everybody was tripping out on. It's like, because in real life, it's like, oh shit, you know, people are murdering each other in the street. They're shooting, they're having shootouts, they're you know, killing people. But in the morning when you wake up, you're like, I still got to put my pants on and go make money so I can put food on the table for my kids. How am I going to do that in a war zone? Well, you got to figure out a way, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's showcased in the book, in the Undead Border book. People are still trying to make a living, still trying to survive and live, even though there's like zombies, even though people have died. And and that's the thing, people thought that we were going to take the comedic aspect to it, and we didn't. This is like totally serious. Of course, you know, there's humor
yeah, there's levity and crazy characters, right? But
yeah,
I mean, it's kind of like, I like to say it's a mix of what is it, Mad Max, Return of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and kind of like, because Mad Max is it's a serious movie. It's not, they're not laughing, they're not joking. It's the apocalypse, and it's kind of like, and incorporate border life, no, Juarez in there, and yeah, I think it's a perfect mix. And I know a lot of people, oh, zombies are played out and blah blah blah, and I honestly hate when they say that, because you're not reading good zombie stories. You're not watching good zombie movies, because that's Hollywood. And there was a time where they milked the genre, dude, like to death. And they were just putting out crap after crap after crap. And And that's, and I understand why they say that, but I mean, dude, if you like the genre, you're gonna look for, you're gonna hunt for good stuff. You're gonna like swim through crap so you can like reach to an old an island of good zombie media, no?
The thing I find that that I'm more interested in, like, not only, you know, like the cultural stuff and all that, but when you can actually get the horror elements to not necessarily be the main focus, but, you know, like you were saying, you have to live through the zombie apocalypse. So what are you going to do? You know, you get a story. You can still get stories without having that being the main, the, you know, the thing that takes up the most of the thing. You still, you're trying to get the story of the people trying to survive in the apocalypse rather than the zombies themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons, like, one of my favorite authors is Stephen King.
Yes.
And the reason why I like his books more is because he gets a group of people. It's usually a group of people. Put them in a situation, and now let's see how they react.
The Mist comes to mind.
Really, yeah, yeah. Yes. Then that's really what it is. It's how these people interact, how these people who normally maybe would never really talk to each other, even if they're in the same town or in the same, always see each other in the, around town in the supermarket, like in the Mist, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't interact with each other, but now they're stuck together. Now they have to try to survive together. What is their interactions? And go.
Yeah, dude, that's kind of like my favorite type of movies now. How do people, a group of people, a group of strangers have to like overcome like these odds, no? These like supernatural, mm-hmm. and paranormal and like out of this world situation.
It brings out the best in humanity and also the worst at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that you say that because it mirrors life, especially like during the pandemic, man. Like when we were doing books, we noticed like so much stuff that we were writing about was actually happening, especially around here. I mean, these guys, especially in Juarez, some of it in El Paso, but you saw how people had to adapt. Even the cartel adapted, you know, and that's crazy to think about because, okay, there's a pandemic, but we still got to move these drugs, you know, guys? So let's figure something out so that everyone's like collaborates and stuff like that. It's nuts, man. So that's something that we try to capture, especially with that border horror theme. And so far, people have been really enjoying the shit out of it. So I'm glad about it.
Anything else that y'all want to talk about before we jump into the cryptid?
We just also finished another book called Dead Stop, which is very similar. In content to Infestacion, but also different at the same time, because we had mentioned earlier, we had a group of creators that came down to visit, and they wanted to get kind of like a taste of what was going on. So we're trying to do that through that book, and it just finished crowdfunding very recently, and we finished delivering, you know, fulfilling the orders, and people are really liking it. It's kind of like a Tales from the Crypt with you know, a Spanish flavor to it, especially with the stuff that goes on around here. And you see a lot of landmarks and a lot of situations that happen only, that would only happen in Juarez. And Oli has a little bit more, information
on that.
I just contributed.
Yeah, like Ray says, it's our Tales from the Crypt. We published over here in Juarez, like 3 volumes. It was called Ñañeras, which is like kind of like what, like heebie-jeebies, no, or eerie for you guys. Mm-hmm. But so it's a mythology collection of short horror stories, like dealing with the border, urban legends, ripped from the headlines and like cartel rumors and all that. So again, man, we decided to like, okay, let's get the best ones and translate them into English and release a campaign. So it's for and this is the interesting part, because this is what Dominic, our brother, or another member of 6x6, he came up with, like how to package it and sell it to the American audience, because I didn't want to like, oh, let's just collect the issue, the stories, no, and that's it. But I mean, I want to like have a, how do you present it to a reader, no, like, because honestly, with our type of stories, we want to like I want the reader to have an experience reading it. Like, this is what happens here, and I want to like give them that feeling. No, so my brother said, "Oh, let's have a bus driver be our horror host, kind of like the Crypt Keeper." And I was like, "What? That's genius, man! Because that's kind of because every stop is the story. No, it's the introduction of each story." And we have the bus motif, the bus driver, and all that. And that's why it's called Dead Stop, Tour of Terror, the book. And
I think the cool part about that was when we were pitching it, people were asking, well, why a bus driver? I'm like, if you've never experienced a bus drive in Juarez, then you wouldn't understand, because those guys are hardcore, man. Those guys, even Oliver has talked about this on stream, like, those guys would get into fights with each other, with other bus riders. They'd have shootouts with other bus drivers.
There's like, video what? Evidence, Saul, of shootouts between bus drivers.
It's like the Molotov song where they're talking about the people putting their lives at risk with the troferes.
Oh yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. It's just crazy, man. And also, man, during the cartel war, bus drivers were also like in it, man. There would be, you would find that, oh, this bus driver was shot and killed because he was a drug runner too, and he was selling on the side. And yeah, man, it's everybody's involved in this shit, man. So we thought that, man, a bus driver is a horror host, and he's based on an actual bus driver, because my brother also, when he was going to school, his bus driver was called Crazy. He was always like, "Hey, me Crazy." That was a nickname for everybody, and he would tell us that, "Oh man, this guy would like stop the bus in the middle of the road and just walk out and take a piss on the tire." And I mean, he would be asking for money from the kids, like, "Hey man, let me 20 pesos, man. You need to buy a Coke or something, or a burrito, man." He was a real character, so that was the inspiration for a horror host, man. And we're actually thinking about doing a second chance campaign, or opening up an online store so we can sell off the rest of the books, man. Because
I was gonna ask that: is there any way for anyone who's listening to get either of the books that we're going to be talking about today?
I mean, the Cryptinals, it's on sale. It's totally, you could get it online. But the other ones, Undead Border, I think we're practically sold out. I think we have, like, what, 5 issues left, maybe, Ray?
Yeah, I don't know. I counted them the other day. I think there's, like, 5
books check left. Your bookshelf, because you have them all there. And Dead Stop, we still have a bunch of books there, and we're thinking about... Well, I mean, not thinking. I'm going to do it. I'm going to open up an e-shop really, really soon. But, I mean, follow us on our social media so you can be notified when we do that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We're very active on social media. We got Instagram. We've got
Twitter.
TikTok. Oh, we can't call it Twitter anymore. It's X.
What the hell is that all about, man? Jesus.
Facebook, all that stuff. You can find us everywhere. And, of course, if you just follow 656 Comics and Blacktooth Comics as well, so that you know where we're at and what we're doing.
Yeah, and I'll definitely put those links in the description. That way people can reach out to you all.
Awesome. Yes, sir.
So... you want to go ahead and switch over to the... Let me see if I can say this right now.
Cryptidnals?
Yes, there you go. Cryptidnals. A lot of people call it cryptidnals, and then there's the cryptidnals. But, yeah, that's
let's cool. Go to the main course.
Okay, so like I said, when I saw the preview there, I had to reach out, because cryptids and creepypasta characters, I mean... Well, at least when I was growing up, those were two of the most popular things. The creepypasta was actually blowing up when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And cryptids, I've always been interested in cryptids, especially like Chupacabra and all that. It's something that's always I've always been interested in it. So
yeah, I mean, we oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, do you want to give us a background on how this came around?
Yes, of course, no problem. So when I was a kid, I experienced La Llorona, or at least, you know, what I think was La Llorona.
Same.
And you living in your area as well, you have your version of La Llorona like everybody mm-hmm. else does that lives, you know, in Texas or, you know, New Mexico and California. And Mexico, of course, because that's where she originates from. And I think that experience really opened up my mind as far as what supernatural phenomenon was and stuff like that. And all throughout my life, I have experienced a lot of pretty effed up stuff when it comes to the paranormal. You know, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to talk about her, but my mother, my mother was into some stuff. And it wasn't until I got older that I started figuring it out. And once I started figuring it out, I was doing a lot of research as far as, you know, what I had experienced growing up, the things that, you know, would affect the area, the things that have happened in the area. And it all led back to these urban legends, you know. And, of course, the urban legends have cryptids, monsters, things that we grew up with, things that were used against us when we were kids in order to keep us in line. Mm-hmm. And La Llorona was at the very forefront of that. And if it wasn't for that experience, I think I would have never really, you know, I just would have lived a very, like, normal life and not wanted to delve deeper. But that's what started it. And as far as the cryptinoids, I was already into cryptids. And this happened about 10 years ago, more or less. My good friend was living with me, and during the day he's a comic book artist. I don't want to say was, because, you know, that hasn't been confirmed that he's dead, because he's been missing for a while. But
oh, wow.
I know, huh? So we had this. I guess it was a game, but it was more like an exercise where we've been doing comics since we were in high school, and everything we lived and breathed was just comic books. And we have our artists, and we love, you know, our runs. You know, I was a big X-Men fan. He was a big X-Men fan. Claremont, you know, all that stuff. And we would drive around, and we'd throw pitches at each other. You know, we'd pitch back and forth, like, well, if you had your dream team of artists, who would you get, and what would you pitch? You know, stuff like that. So one day we were driving around, and he looks at me, and he's all like, what is the craziest story that you can think of right now that you would want to make a comic? And I was like, you know what? Cryptids. Cryptids stealing religious artifacts across the world for the U.S. government, and I would call it the cryptinoids because they would be criminals and they would be cryptids at the same time. And that's where it came from. It evolved from that. And as I started, you know, thinking about it, I'm like, how would that even work? It just got deeper and deeper. And I had already been researching cryptids before that and, you know, had my experiences. So that just kind of snowballed into this, and it changed a lot. It changed because if cryptids were going to be the you know, protagonist, who would be the antagonist if they're already monsters? And that's where the creepypasta aspect came in, because those are the new monsters, you know, the cyber world that are breeding mm-hmm. these new horrors, these new nightmares. And I was like, how would you pit cryptids against creepypastas if creepypastas are, you know, online, or they're cyber horror? And that's where the story started taking shape. And I kind of based it off of the fact that, you know, you would need a team, you would need some sort of lore, you would need a universe to live in, and it just started building and building from there. So it's been going on for about 10 years. And then Dario was is the artist. He was working with 6x6 Comics, but I had never approached him with anything because I thought, like, my God, I don't think he's going to want to work with me because of the stuff that he had done before. It's just, his stuff is so good. And he's a man of many talents. Not only is he an artist, he's also a sculptor. He's a muralist. So he's got everything going on. And the crazy thing is that he can change his artwork to fit the story. And that was amazing to me as well, because the artwork in the cryptinoids is completely different from the artwork that he does, like, in other books. So he kind of, like, tailors his artwork to fit the story. So I approached him with the story, and he's like, yeah, let's do it. And originally I wanted to pitch it to Alterna Comics, which is run by Peter Cimetti. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do it in color, and we did the first 6 pages, which kind of stayed the same in the book. And I know you read, you know, some of the book. So those first 6 pages was the hook, was the pitch. And originally Dario drew it in a very different way. And it was supposed, and he colored it as well. And it was right before like everything went crazy as far as pandemic, and I had pitched it. I had sent it off to Alterna so that they could check it out, because he was taking submissions during the time, and something happened where it got lost, and he never received it. He never received the pitch, and I was kind of downhearted. I was kind of like, oh man, you know, that sucks. And that's when I turned around and was talking to these guys, and they're like, oh, to 6x6, mostly Oliver. And
yes,
they were like, well, why don't we do it? Why don't we do it? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? How? Why don't we do it? And like he was saying earlier, you know, the advent of crowdfunding was very new, and it was booming. So I turned it over to him, and he looked at it, and he's like, nope, we're not going to do this. We got to change it all, because you're selling me what did you say? You're selling me goods that are not here. What did you say?
Yeah, you were whatever you described it was not reflected in the artwork. Yeah, that's the thing. If you're going to hype it up, yeah, you have to reflect that hype in the artwork. Mm-hmm. So it's I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it worked, you know. That's why Oliver is part of the team. That's why he's part of, you know, the creation of the...
That's why they hate me so. That's why they hate me.
Yeah, because he has a big eraser and he's not afraid to use it. So he started, like, you know, cutting it down and breaking it down. He's like, look, man, this is what you need to do. This is what we need to do. The biggest gripe that I had with him, Saul, was the color aspect, because I wanted color. And he's a colorist, all right? So get this. I told him, yeah, well, you're a colorist, you should know. And he's like, yeah, I know, and I don't want color in this. I don't want to see color in this. And I'm like, what do you mean? That's the whole thing. I want color in this. He's like, nope. No, it has to be black and white. And we fought back and forth on that aspect for a very long time. But finally, he won out because he was right. He was truly right, because if the book had been in color, it wouldn't have the same theme, mm-hmm, or it's the same atmosphere that it does now. And you can tell that by the way that Dario ended up drawing it.
Yeah, when I think of like horror books, I actually think more of black and white. Mm-hmm. Just growing up with like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was one of the big things. And of course the story, you know, we needed to have our antagonist, like I said before. I'm sorry, our protagonist. And I wanted to take actual cryptids that existed, but were kind of not so much obscure, but not as well known, because everybody can hit the big ones immediately. You know, the Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Mothman, you know, the Jersey Devil. All of those can be hit immediately because everyone's familiar with them. But I started delving into the whole area that we lived in on the border and what was kind of prevalent around here. And that's when I started finding out these obscure cryptids, like the Man Dog. The Man Dog is like a big, big hit. Everybody loves the Man Dog. And he's an actual cryptid that is based off of the area here where we live in San Eli, Texas, which is maybe like, I don't know, 20 minutes away from where I live. And the Man Dog is a very interesting story. It's a cursed Texas Ranger that turns into a man. I'm sorry, it turns into a dog that is a man. And it's not to be confused with the Dogman phenomenon, because I'm sure you've heard of that one. That's mostly like in the Michigan Dogman, stuff like that. This is actually a man dog. And the way the story goes is back in the 1800s, there was a salt war in the area. And this is actually, you know, written down. And the landowners were using the villagers in the area to cross the salt from the U.S. into Mexico. And they were very bad, and they treated the villagers and the area in the area very, very badly. So they ended up uprising, and they started murdering all the landowners. And the Texas Rangers were called in, and it's the only time in recorded history that the Rangers were ever defeated in any battle. These villagers took to arms, killed all the Rangers, cut them up into pieces and threw them down a well, and that well still sits in San Elisario right by the church, which is crazy. But according to legend, they left one of them alive, and that one they cursed because he was the worst of all the Rangers. They cursed him with, and it sounds better in Spanish if I say it in Spanish, right? They said, por todo el mal que has hecho, te vas a arrastrar como perro para siempre, para la eternidad. And
translated.
He turned into the Man Dog. For all the evil that you've ever committed in your life, you will wander the earth like a dog without a home, and for eternity. And that's where the Mad Dog came from. So he's a cursed Texas Ranger that's seeking redemption, trying to become a man again. And his backstory is like one of the most fleshed out stories that I have. I have so many stories for him. But he seems to be like the Wolverine, I guess, of the Kryptonauts.
That's funny because when I was reading his dialogue, I was picturing like a Wolverine voice, like Clint Eastwood voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Awesome. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that's one of the characters, you know, and of course we have La Llorona, and her story is also very near and dear to me. But the thing about La Llorona is that I've always hated the way that she's represented by mainstream media, and they never give her that aspect of humanity where there has to be a reason why she's a monster. And I wanted to change that, and I think that we did. And when you get deeper into the book, you'll see what I mean. And not to spoil anything, because I know you haven't read it yet. And not to spoil anything, because I know the floppy hasn't come out yet either. But we gave her a twist where the reason that she this is messed up, but I'm gonna say it anyway. The reason that she murders her children makes sense, and it has more to do with loss and grief and how people deal with that than it has to do with selfishness. I mean, there's that tinge of selfishness because, of course, who doesn't, you know, think like, oh my God, they're selfish if they decide to do some atrocity like that. But we tried to give her that human aspect, and it did, and it worked also because people see her in a different light as far as the book is concerned. They see her more human, and we actually kind of modernized her as to the situation. We come back to the border again, as to what's going on the border right now with the murdered women and children, of course, the cartel wars, all that stuff, all the violence that's happening in Juarez and in Mexico. And La Llorona is kind of like the patron saint of all the atrocities that are going on over there. And we give her a reason to exist now in modern times, rather than just to be used against us to scare us into behaving. You know, I don't know if you remember that as a kid, they would tell us like, hey, you don't, you know, no te portas bien, La Llorona is going to come for you and she's going to take you. And
yeah, if you're wandering outside on late at night when you're not supposed to be, you're going to get caught too. Like La Llorona is one of those stories that, like you said, if you, especially even here in the United States, even though it really, I think it started more in Mexico, but even here in the United States where there's a lot of Mexican and Mexican American culture, you're going to hear about La Llorona, and each little town's going to have their own story. Going back to Querétaro, I think I was about 15. Mm-hmm. Over there in Querétaro, it's rancho, right? Ranch. Mm-hmm. And you have to, when you have to go to the restroom, you have to go outside, go into the outhouse, and go do your business. Well, I woke up one night and I was getting ready to, like, oh man, I need to go to the restroom. All of a sudden, I hear like something like wailing in the night. I'm like, oh crap! And where my grandparents live, it's right near a river. And I'm like, I do not know what that is. I do not want to go outside. So I go, how do they say, me aguante? I just waited till the morning. Like, no, I'm not going to go out there. Well, the next morning, we're getting ready to have breakfast. My grandma's, you know, cooking. And my uncle comes in, who at that point he wasn't living there. He's actually from Mexico City, right? But he grew up there in that area. He comes in and goes, oh man, pinche Llorona wouldn't stop crying last night. I'm like, oh shoot. To me, it was like, maybe it was just in my head. But when my uncle came down, who was in a whole different level of the house, he said that. So I'm like, oh man. I goes, that. So what I heard was like Llorona. That I know if I hear that well again, I'll know it because I'll get goosebumps.
Isn't it crazy how it's ingrained in your head, like that memory? That's very similar to what I experienced as well. I experienced it a little bit more intense than that because I actually tried to see what it was, and I think that's what messed me up. But and that's the thing, man. Like growing up in this area of the world, or in this area of the nation, we experience totally different horrors or totally different nightmares than anywhere else in the U.S. And that's something that we are trying to bring to the front once again, you know, the border area that we live in, with all the characters that come out in the Kryptonauts. They're based in this area. Even Spring Heeled Jack, Spring-Heeled Jack had been seen in London, mm-hmm. Back in the 1800s, but there were sightings of Spring-Heeled Jack in the 1920s in Houston and in the 1950s in Silver City, New Mexico. Mm. And when I was doing the research for that, I was like super amazed because Spring-Heeled Jack is one of my favorite cryptids, if not the favorite cryptid that I have. And I always wanted to have them at the, you know, and I wanted to write a story about them because I found them very intriguing. A lot of people consider Spring-Heeled Jack the first superhero or the first iteration of a superhero because if you've ever read the description, you know, they had like a metallic suit on and they had bat wings and a helmet and they would spit out like blue flame. And I'm like, man, that totally sounds like a superhero mm-hmm. to me or some sort of something. And I wanted to have that thrown in there too. So he's in there, but it's a female version, which is the daughter of the original Spring-Heeled Jack, and her name is Radron. So we threw her in there also. And then, you know, rounding out the cast, we have the Goatman, the Denton Goatman. Mm-hmm. That guy's intense, man. Everybody loves that guy too. They consider him like a Conan-esque character. And when you meet him, he's doing what goat men should be doing, right? Which is hunting chupacabras. So I thought that would be cool to throw that aspect in there because, of course, the chupacabra is very popular too. And then we had the Rogueru, which, you know, if you live in Texas, you know, there's werewolves out there. And we had Kid Cthulhu. I wanted Cthulhu because I'm a big fan of H.P. Lovecraft, but I wanted a different version of it. And we got the elder god Cthulhu and trapped him in the body of a 7-year-old boy. And we're like, well, what are you going to do if you're an elder god but you're just a kid? You know, so Kid Cthulhu came from that. And all of them are fully fleshed out in a way where I wanted them to be able to carry their own book if that time ever came. Because I don't like just throwaway characters, you know, mm-hmm. just to insert them and just have them there. So we came up with that team of the Kryptonauts. And, you know, as far as the lore is concerned, there's been other teams of Kryptonauts with other cryptids, but this is the current one right now that you meet in the book. And then we had to have the antagonists, which were the creepypastas, which is, you know, something you were talking about earlier. And immediately when you say the word creepypasta, which creepypasta comes to mind? Which is the first one?
There's two, actually, that come to mind. It was Slenderman and Jeff the Killer.
Yeah, there you go. Slenderman and Jeff the Killer. So Slenderman, I wanted to use that character, but that's an actual copywritten character. You cannot use that character without the permission of the creator. Oh. So I had to get around that in a way, and I started delving into what makes a Slender Man, what is the Slender Man, and I started like finding a lot of similarities with other, I guess, entities or monsters and stuff that have existed throughout the ages, and also in literature. And I made the connection with this one thing, and we named it El Ñango. And El Ñango means, what does it mean, Oliver?
Lanky, tall.
Tall and lanky. Yeah. And we named it that, El Ñango. And then the name just sounds kind of creepy, too. But, I mean, not to disrespect the creator, but I thought the Slender Man needed more meat and needed a little bit more depth. And that's what we gave El Ñango, the depth and the meaning that I think was lacking a little bit from the Slender Man story. And it actually made it creepier and kind of scarier because the motivations for the existence of El Ñango are kind of messed up, man, like really messed up. So we threw that in there. We threw in the black-eyed kids, which is something that's been happening, you know, the phenomenon, but it started in Abilene. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that it was ever reported that there was, you know, black-eyed children out there. It was a newspaper reporter that experienced it, and that was back in the 90s. So we threw that in there, and then also, you know, we have I don't want to give it away too much, but the Bigfoot and the Rake. The Rake is another creepypasta that has come to the forefront also. It's like this lanky, canid kind of creature that, you know, its only purpose is to destroy human life or to eat people. Stuff like that. So we took the Bigfoot aspect and combined it with the Rake. And if you keep going in the story, then you'll figure out what's going on with the Bigfoots and the Rakes. And and also later on in the story, we'll get to, once you read it, you'll get to the other you know, I guess the other popular creepypasta that you mentioned, besides the Slender Man as well. So we'll get to that one too.
So talking about the Black Eyed Kids, I don't know if you ever heard of this podcast called Astonishing Legends. And yes, they have two episodes talking about the Black Eyed Kids. I had not heard of that phenomena until then. Mm-hmm. And some of my favorite episodes, they have Spring Hill Jack in there. They talk about Spring Hill Jack in one of their episodes. There's a lot of things and it's very well researched, and it's very serious, actually. Mm-hmm. With one being more of a skeptic more than anything else, you know, one wanting to believe more of it. Mm-hmm. So if y'all, and actually I had one of their research crew on the podcast before too.
Oh, nice.
To we talked about the Krampus movie. And I would recommend people, if you haven't heard them, go ahead and listen to them. But I did tell you when we were talking, and goes, I need to tell you about my story as far why I consider Bigfoot my mortal enemy.
I want to hear this.
I've told the story here on the podcast before, but when I think I was around 15, we lived. I was living in Harlingen, which is down in the Rio Grande Valley, and the way where we were living, it was a trailer park, but it was an intersection with a dirt road. Then our subdivision would start. But on the other side of the regular road, because there's a dirt road crossing with a paved road, right? On the other side of the paved road was another set of the neighborhood where there had some farmland. And then on the dirt side road, I don't know if it's making sense now how I'm trying to pronounce it, there is a cornfield. Mm-hmm. All right, so one night I got home, and my parents say, you didn't take out the trash. You know, this is around 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, oh, crap. So all right, so I get the I get the trash, I go outside. So I look across the street as I'm walking, you know, taking the trash out to the curb. I see this big, massive, hairy thing across the road.
Jesus.
And I didn't know what it was. I can't even say it was Bigfoot. I'm just saying it's Bigfoot because it looks big, massive, hairy thing, you know. And I see it moving around. It doesn't see me, but I for whatever reason, I get scared and I freeze. And I'm just looking at it, and it's looking around. All of a sudden, it just takes off running into the cornfield. It just takes off. Oh, man. And I went inside, and I'm like, I didn't say anything. I actually forgot about the story for the longest time. Well, like a couple of days later, once again, we're getting home late. We realized that my dog had a beagle named Smokey. Mm-hmm. And those dogs, they're like hunting dogs, right? So the neighbors, a friend of us, they had been saying that their chickens had been getting killed and eaten by some animal. So my parents were like, you need to try to find them because we don't want them to think it's the dog. Well, we ended up looking for him. We can't find him all night. We couldn't find him. We woke up the next morning, and he actually got shot. The neighbor shot him because they thought. But because of what I saw the night before, I'm thinking it was the Bigfoot kind of creature eating the chickens, and they blamed the dog on it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So that's why I said that Bigfoot's my mortal enemy.
I would chill. Hell yeah, man. I'm with you on that.
Let's
one.
Let's go hunting Bigfoot, guys.
But you know, the craziest thing is that, like, about 6 years later, I'm working. I'm a drafter. So I'm working at this drafting company, and this one of my coworkers, he was like trying to struggle not to fall asleep, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? His name is Rico. I go, hey, Rico, what's going on? And he's like, man, I couldn't sleep last night. And I was like, what? What happened? He goes, man, I saw something weird last night when I was driving home, because he would drive like 45 minutes to from his town. It was called Santa Maria, I think it was called, to Harlingen. And he goes, yeah, man, I was driving home late last night. And as I was driving, I saw this big, massive creature crossing the road, like with like a bunch of hair and all that. And at this point, I had not told the story to anybody. I had just kept it to myself. And he's like, he was just crossing the road. It was real slow, kind of like that. And then all of a sudden, he just took off running. And it goes, and I don't know why, but as soon as I saw it, I couldn't move. He froze. And I told him, like, dude, he goes, I saw the same thing like 6 years ago, but here in Harlingen. And he's like, dude, he was scared. He couldn't sleep that night because of that. And so I'm like, oh crap, I didn't know it was something that people actually like saw. And later on, I ended up finding out that I didn't know this, but there was actually Bigfoot sightings in the Rio Grande Valley, and it's not something that we're not even aware of. Growing up in the valley,
it's true. It's very true. They're very active in the valley. They're very active, kind of in the Panhandle area, where Big Bend is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because in my research, of course, maybe this will add some insight to your story. But in my research, it seems that the ones that are in Texas are very, very aggressive. They're very aggressive.
It's the heat.
And they've been known. Yeah, it might be the heat. Yeah. You never know. But it's just that Texas heat. They're very aggressive, and they tend to murder, like, small animals just for kicks. It's weird. Like, a lot of dogs, a lot of pets end up getting perished because these things have that aggressiveness to this. If you ever see one, you're not supposed to approach them. You just leave them alone, and hopefully they'll just go away. But there has been reports, and it's kind of messed up, because I listen to a lot of podcasts as well. I listen to a Sasquatch Chronicles. I don't know if you listen to that one.
I have not.
No, if you get a chance, listen to that one. And the guy's name is Wes. He's the one that hosts it. The thing about that one that I find very interesting and very intriguing is that he always has people on there that have like reputations. They're either park rangers or they're ex-military or they're, they're cops. And they're the ones that are telling the stories of their encounters. He's even had priests on there and stuff like that. And they tell the story of these things, that mostly it's usually just the Bigfoot phenomena. And, from listening to the stories, from doing my own research, it seems that the ones in Texas are more aggressive. They're very, very dangerous. And they've been known to kill people. Or rather, there's no proof that they've murdered them, but, they've hound people dead in the woods in ways where, regular people wouldn't be murdered, what I mean? So that leads me to believe that, these things are very, very dangerous. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what you guys have experienced. Another aspect of Bigfoot is that whole freezing up when you see it. It's natural for us to be afraid. It's natural for us to have fear. But when something like this happens, people tend to freeze because we always question the videos. Like, why didn't they rush to see it? Why didn't they just take that step to just go see what it was?
Mm-hmm.
According to researchers, they say that the creature emits like a low frequency sound that you can't hear, but you feel the effects of it. And part of that is freezing up and staying in place, kind of like a sonic blast, if you want to call it that. And then you stay in place and you can't move, you can't do anything. You just experience what you're experiencing, and that's it. And I see that a lot in a lot of stories because people just tend to freeze and they don't want to approach that thing. So yeah, your friend was acting exactly like he should have been acting. I wouldn't he wouldn't have been able to get near that thing. So, but nah, man, I feel for you. I feel for your puppy. Damn, bro. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I've said that story. And the one a funny thing as well is that my co-host Greg, my normal co-host, he's based out of Seattle, and I hear a lot of Bigfoot stories going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a little store, and his mascot is him dressed up as like a Sasquatch, but he dresses him up like Macho Man, so he's called him the Squatcho Man.
Oh, that's cool.
And I told him, he goes, you're betraying me by continuously bringing up that the Sasquatch Bigfoot monster there as your logo or as your mascot.
Exactly, man. Shh. It's like, thanks for wearing my dog murderer's costume jerk. Yeah. Oh man, I mean, a lot of research has gone into the book and the Bigfoot one especially as well. But everybody hits that one immediately whenever they talk about cryptids. Immediately you think Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different aspects. There's a lot of layers to it, and a lot of people don't know about it. I mean, there's supposedly 6 different species, and each of them have their own like personality. And the Dogman phenomenon is also part of the Bigfoot phenomenon. They're kind of like more feral versions of Bigfoot, where they're not really dog people. But because of the way that they eat, what they eat, and how they live, they're more savage. So apparently, like, their face has adapted to that because they eat so much meat, according to the researchers. Their mouths have receded in a way where it looks like they have maws and they have fangs. So they have that dog man look or that dog look. But they're actually Bigfoot. It's very, very cool. Very interesting.
Yeah, like I said, this is the reason why I reached out to y'all, because this really calls out to me.
Yeah, man, especially when you have like a childhood a trauma, I guess, if you want to call it that, or mm-hmm. something that shapes like a core memory, to put it like that, that stays with you, and you got to do something with that. You have to either research it and explore it or bury it and forget it. And usually when you bury it and forget it, it comes back to haunt you, or it pops up in your waking life in different ways, and
mm-hmm.
you have to do something with it. And that's like something with the book, the Cryptonauts. I had to do something with everything that I knew, especially like the stuff that my mom was into, the stuff that I experienced, the stuff that my family was doing, the Llorona thing. I saw a lot of shadow people growing up in my home. A lot of weirdness, I saw UFOs, stuff like that. So I had to do something with that. And this is what came of it. I decided to write a book about it, write a comic book about my experiences, but base it more in the, I don't want to call it superhero, but in the horror hero. Is that mm-hmm. a thing? Horror hero?
Yeah, yeah.
aspect of it.
Have you all heard
horror
of,
aspect of it.
Have you all heard of the comic book Footprints?
No.
Yes, I've heard about it. I never read it.
Joey Esposito, I read this one a long time ago. This is about 10 years ago. I think it was about 10 years ago that I read it. And it's about like Bigfoot, Mothman, Loch Ness Monster, Megalodon, the goat, not the goat man, Jersey Devil, and Chupacabra. They've all been pretty much all cryptids have been revealed to the world. And after all this time, the world has now starting to just like, okay, they're just regular. They exist. Some of them are good and some of them are evil.
Mm-hmm.
But so what Bigfoot does, he ends up creating a detective agency with these cryptids, and they go out and solve weird mysteries and all that. It's a really good read. I don't think he's ever going to go back to it from what I understand, though. It was a one shot, and then he did a second one shot. Standalone story on its own, it's a shorter one, but that was about it.
Wow. Is it more of a comedic story or serious?
It's more of a like a detective noir.
Okay.
Yeah.
To me, that's a mine of cool stories that I could write from that idea. Like this book, like the Cryptonauts. Like I just have tons and tons of stories that I want to tell. About these guys, because like I said, there's been other teams, there's been other, if you want to call them teams, there's been other groupings of the Cryptonauts. Right now in the back of the floppies, we're running like I was saying earlier in the green room, the humans aspect of the book of the cryptids, because like I said, it's very monster centric and everyone wants to know where the humans are. So in the back of the floppy we're running, it's called Dark Light. And it's what the humans are doing, or what the humans are planning on doing because of this cryptid threat. So as they see it, a cryptid threat. So that's what's going on there. But I'm also incorporating a lot of the cyber world, I guess you could call it, like nightmare fuel, like the back rooms.
Mm-hmm.
That's been very prominent as of late. You know, and different aspects of that, like what is that all involved? You know, the Men in Black, you know, the Plague Doctors, the SCP stuff, you know, but giving it a different spin and trying to change it up a little bit in order to fit into the universe that we've created with the Kryptonians.
Yeah.
Can't forget the talking mongoose, Ray.
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's interesting about that. I don't know if you've seen that trailer. Was it Dr. Fyodor and the Isle of Man or something like that?
Mm-mm.
Simon Pegg is in it. And they just released a trailer, I think, like 2 weeks ago. And I got so upset, man, because, there's this one cryptid that I find fascinating. His name is Jeff, the Talking Mongoose. I don't know if you ever heard of that one. So,
no.
No. So back in the early 1900s, on the Isle of Man, which is close to England, there was a family that was being, I don't know if you want to call it terrorized, but they were having issues with a mongoose that lived in the walls of their home, of their farm, and would talk to them. And he would say things, and it would scare the crap out of them, you know? And I always found that fascinating because the family are the only ones that ever saw it. People that would go visit the farm would hear it, but they would never see it. But the family was the one that always saw it. And I was like, man, why would a mongoose... First of all, how did the mongoose learn how to talk? And why would it be terrorizing these people and saying these things? That doesn't make any sense to me. But as I did the research on it, I'm like, wait a minute, there's more here. If you know, you put a spin on it, there would be a really good story here. So I incorporated that into the Darklight story. And I'm putting them in the comic, and it's Jeff the Talking Mongoose, which is exactly what I'm saying. It's a mongoose that talks.
That's I'm gonna have to look that up now. Hear more stories about that. But you know, even like there's a lot more you can bring in, like duendes and all that. I think that honestly. Mm-hmm. Being from Mexico, my mom has seen a lot of stuff, and that's one thing that she used to see is duendes. I guess they're gnomes in English. Mm-hmm. Is that what they are?
Los duendes. There you go, Oli. Your turn.
I don't know anything about duendes, dude.
Oli is very skeptical, but he has a lot of information and stuff. You were telling me last time that they have shrines to them and stuff like
that. Yeah, I don't know if you saw this, Saul, but they were building an overpass in, I don't know, was it Acapulco or Cancun? But they didn't have the clearance from those local duendes, dude. Because it's interesting because every time they made progress, and the next day they would see it in ruins. Because they didn't have the blessing of the duendes. So what did they do? They built the shrine under the bridge. And that's it. That's how they got the blessing. And they finished the bridge, and there's a little shrine under it. And they allowed for the construction workers to build their bridge, and everything was peachy after that.
Yeah, I've heard that if you buy land or whatever and you find a little house,
yeah,
you're not supposed to destroy it because that's the house of the duendes. And if you are excavating land or whatever and you don't find anything, then you probably should create a little house for them so that they can go in there and live.
Yeah.
Because supposedly they're supposed to be good, but I know, I grew up with the Mexican show El Chespirito, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. El Chavo del Ocho and all that, right? And what was it? Yeah. Chapulín, the Red Grasshopper, sí. Chapulín Colorado. Chapulín Colorado. And yeah, Chapulín Colorado. He had a couple. You know, sometimes they would repeat the stories, but there was a couple of episodes where they were fighting the duendes. They were just little puppets, right? That they were fighting. But that's how I remember them. And my mom told me once I got a little older that she used to see them all the time. And then my grandpa later on told me, he goes, yeah, when I was little, he used to see them too. And they never did anything bad. They were just messing with them, keeping them awake and just making people think that they're crazy. And my mom has not seen them in since she moved away from over there. But, you know. My grandpa said that once he grew up, he stopped seeing them. They moved on to someone else, and then they moved on to my mom, and then they moved on to someone else there as well.
Yeah, Ray was talking about the book fair, right? That we had friends coming over. I also had friends from Mexico City coming over, and it was funny because they rented out an Airbnb like near the event, and each time I would like go and greet them every morning, they would come with me with a story that, oh man, something happened in the Airbnb, and they would blame it on duendes like every time.
What? You didn't tell me no, this.
I don't know if it's duendes or a ghost. I don't know, something, but it was more mischievous because something went missing and then appeared later on the day at somewhere else, and like, yeah, I think there's a duende there. Yeah, one of the writers that was saying that he would be like very scared. No, I don't want to go back there. Those duendes are driving me crazy and all that. And it's funny that one of them, of the little group, I would visit his house like every time we would go to Mexico City, we would stay there, like for an event or something. We would stay at his house, and one day I went down to the kitchen, and I saw a little plate with candies there, and I was like, oh good, candies, I'm gonna get one. And he stopped me. Hey, don't touch that. That's for the duendes. Yeah. What the hell was that? Why do you have candies for duendes? No, because there would be days that my shit would go missing, no? And so I would just leave a little plate of candies just to appease them. And hey, it's for you. That's crazy. Don't go touching my stuff. That's your stuff there. Here's your candy. It's, yeah, that's for you. And I was like, oh crap. Yeah.
It's nuts, man, because you start doing the research, and then you start connecting, you know, the pieces together with like real life events, like stuff that's, you know, been in the media and stuff like that, like everything that's going on right now with the aliens, you know. Mm-hmm. the everyone's coming out in the government and admitting to it. So if that's real, what else is real? What else is out there that we've barely seen, but we know, we have an idea, like what you said, you know, earlier with your story about what you experienced with the Bigfoot phenomenon. So there has to be something.
I'm very skeptical of the aliens now, the alien agenda right now, because the government is telling me
conspiracy
theory? What's going on now, and I'm, oh crap, yeah. I don't know about that, guys.
they're going to do something to us now.
Yeah, they're hiding something, or they're planning to do something, or...
It's a false flag.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
look, people, the aliens are over here, back behind us, they're doing something else.
Yeah, but the cool thing about this is all the TikTok videos that are coming out of the
Oh yeah, man, tons
of the aliens like coming down the hoods and Mexico, and yeah, it's really funny, man.
Oh, that reminds me. Before we get away from the subject, as far as the duendes are concerned, if you get a chance, Saul, look up. See if I can pronounce this right. Look up. The Fairy Shoe of Barra Peninsula. It's kind of hard. Maybe I'll text it to you. But it's documentation of something that was found like back, I think it was in the 1800s. They found a shoe.
I already found it.
And you've heard about it?
No, I already found it on the line.
Oh, you already found it? Yeah, dude, that thing tripped me the hell out when I read it, because there's like a picture of it, right? And the way they describe it is just, it's trippy. It's scary, but at the same time, it's very, very interesting to me anyway, because like, what the hell? What is that?
See, and to me, I'm kind of a mix of you two, because I'm a skeptic, but I also at the same time believe the stories. If that makes sense?
Yeah.
Not everyone who tells a story, I believe, but not necessarily that they're lying. Or whatever, this could be this and that. And goes, well, I don't know, because I know what my mom knows what she saw, and what she's saying. But is it really that? I can't say it wasn't like that, because the way she described it is the same way I've heard other people describe it. Who, and she didn't have internet back in the day, She can barely use the internet right now, right now. So it's not like she's going around researching this stuff, you know. So yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I'm kind of a mix of both, because I'm a little bit of a skeptic, but I'm also a believer in some of this stuff.
That's a healthy respect for.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say that, Ray. Actually, that. I'm borderline skeptic, but it's much more of a respect than, like, I don't believe in this crap. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I've known my brother, my sister, they've seen stuff in the house. I mean, when my mom passed...
Yeah, I've seen something.
Yeah, when my mom passed away, and she was into the tarot cards, right? And she would read and she would have, like, really shady, like, people coming over, like... Okay. Yeah, we had this, like cleaning lady, and I think she was a curandera, I don't know, but, I mean, I was a little kid, so I'm just, like, piecing the puzzle together, like, right now as a grown-up, mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I mean, something was up with that lady, but she passed away, and we were cleaning out the house of her belongings and all that. My brother and sister would, like, notice, like, shadow people around. Mm-hmm. Out of the corner of their eye, hey, I saw something moving here, I don't know. And I was like, shut up, man, don't scare me. And, yeah, man, I've honestly never experienced anything. I don't have that sense, no? That third eye opened to, like, experience all these kind of things, but people around me just say, hey, man, there's something around here, and don't scare me, guys.
See, and I'm on the complete opposite of that, like, on the other side of that, because of all the stuff that I saw growing up. I mean, I would see shadow people. I would see, like, UFOs and all the stuff that my family was in, the Llorona story. And, like, I'll tell you the Llorona story really quickly, and you can judge to see if I'm lying or not. But I was about 12 years old, 13 years old around that time. And back then, there was a section of El Paso, it was called Moon City, and it was the outskirts, it was the boonies. There was an amusement park called Magic Landing, and it was, like, right where my sister was living. You could see it up on the hill, that's how close they were, but they were out, like, way out, out there in Socorro, which is the area of El Paso where they lived in. And it was Moon City, and they had built their house out of a garage that was attached to the main house. And my brother-in-law had built that. He was a carpenter, and he had built the house for them out of the garage. And it was a perfect square. The house that they lived in was a perfect square. And when you drove in to their driveway, the front of it had a big oak door. And I remember that. And when you would drive in at night, the lights would come in. If you were inside the house, which was a garage, you could see the light come in through the cinder blocks and underneath the door, because obviously my brother-in-law wasn't a very good carpenter, right? So it was kind of off a little bit. But as soon as you walked in, immediately to your left, there was another door, and it would go outside into the backyard where they kept the dogs. Right in front of you was the living room. You went through the living room, and off to the side to the left, there was the kitchen, and it went straight back into the master bedroom. And in the master bedroom, there was a row of windows, and you could look out into the backyard. And beyond the backyard, the wall was right there. There was a canal in the back, and they would feed all the crops that were in the area. I think it was mostly cotton fields. So this one time when I was 12, my brother-in-law got a satellite dish, and he hooked it up, and he told me, hey, man, you know, you want to come over on the weekend, you can spend the night, and if you want, you can watch the Playboy Channel. And I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah, man, you know, that's what I'm all about. I want to watch the Playboy Channel. And back then, if you had a satellite, you had to position it a certain way, you had to move it in order to get reception at a certain time of night. So the Playboy Channel would start at midnight, so you had to wait up until midnight to move the satellite, and then it would get the feed, and you could, you know, start watching the show. Satellite TV, yay. So I remember my sister asked my parents if I could stay over. She didn't tell them why I was staying over. I just wanted to stay over, right? So I stayed over, and we were sitting up in the living room. It was me, my brother-in-law, my sister was there. The kids, my nephews and nieces, were already asleep in the back, and it was getting closer to midnight. And I'm sitting there in the living room, and there was a couch on one side and another couch on the other where my brother-in-law was lying. And the dogs were outside. You could hear them barking every once in a while. We started watching TV. Playboy Channel came on. And sometime during the Playboy Channel, I fell asleep because it was late. No, I was 12, whatever. I saw boobies and I went to sleep. That was it. So then all of a sudden I wake up. I didn't know how much time had passed because I heard loud knocking on the door, on that oak door. It was loud. And I was like, oh, I sat up and I was like, oh, maybe this guy like locked himself out. Let me go open the door for him. So I didn't think anything of it. I got up and started going towards the door. As I'm going towards the door, the dogs are going crazy. They're barking like crazy, like mad. And I'm reaching for the door to open it. And my brother-in-law sits up from the couch. And he's like, whoa, 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 don't open the door. And I'm like, what? And I was confused because I was still kind of half asleep. And he's like, don't open the door. It's La Llorona. If you open the door, she'll come in here and she'll take us all. And I'm like, dude, what were you smoking? You know, what were you drinking? What's going on? And as soon as I thought that, it happened. The scream, the wail, whatever you want to call it, started up. And it sounded intense. It sounded like it was right beyond the door. And I was right there by the door, like waiting to open it. The dogs stopped barking. Everything kind of just went still except for the wailing. And it was like, I remember it, but I can never duplicate what it sounded like. It sounded like someone's trying to scream underwater. But the part that messed me up, and this is the part that I always tell everybody, the part that sticks with me to this day is when it took a breath, because in between the wails, it tried to take a breath. And when it tried to do that, it sounded like someone trying to breathe underwater. It was like the most messed up, the most effed up sound I have ever heard. And when it was doing that, it seemed like forever. And my sister actually came out of the back and she's like, oh, this is happening again. And I'm like, what do you mean again? And I'm still stuck there by the door. And I had this urge, you know, to open the door because I really wanted to see what was behind it. But it kept going and I could feel it. Like, I could feel it right behind the door. But I didn't. And they talked me down. They're like, come sit down on the couch. Just leave it alone. And I'm like, I want to know. I want to see it. But no, I listened to them and I went and I sat down on the couch. And it seemed like forever, man. It just kept going and going and going. And finally, it stopped. And when it stopped, this bright light, like the sun, it was that intense, came in underneath the door through the cracks in the cinder blocks. And it kind of lit up the room. It was weird. It was a really weird experience. And then it kind of faded. It receded. It didn't turn off. It kind of faded, like when you turn off a, you know, headlights and they kind of like fade out. Mm-hmm. And it faded out. And as soon as it faded out, the dog started barking again. Everything started up again. And my sister was there. And I'm like, what do you mean? I was asking her, like, what do you mean it's La Llorona? What are you talking about? She's like, don't worry about it. Go to sleep. We'll talk about it tomorrow. And she went back to bed. My brother-in-law went back, you know, to bed with her. And I just kind of stayed there alone, turned on the TV to ground myself, and just sat there. And I couldn't go back to sleep because what did I just experience? I kept looking out the window. I kept, like, you know, trying to see if I could see something. But there was nothing there. It was just the dogs outside. And I was like, what the hell? So the next morning I asked her, like, what did we see? What did I experience? What was going on? And she's like, don't worry about it. I don't really want to talk about it. It's La Llorona. It happens every once in a while. We'll just leave it at that. No, I want to know more. I want to know what's going on. And they, like, she completely blew me off. She wouldn't tell me. My brother-in-law the same way. Wouldn't tell me anything. But apparently it was a phenomenon that kept occurring to them a lot. And for years and years, I didn't know what I had experienced. And I was too dumb to realize what was going on around me because it kind of followed me back to my house. And that's when I would see stuff and I would hear things. And it started getting really intense, you know, as I hit puberty and I started, you know, getting older. Like, a lot of weird stuff was going on in the house, the shadow people. You know, I would hear chains, I would hear voices. I would see things. My mom would get into arguments with these things. And then later on, I found out, you know, on the day that I graduated from high school, I asked my sister, like, what did I see? What happened? And she was like, well, you know, we were into some stuff. And I think that was part of it. That was the fallout. And then I started remembering, you know, kind of triggers memories. Like you said earlier, you kind of bury it and then things trigger that memory. And you start remembering stuff that you forgot. And I remember reading, you know, like the Necronomicon, reading the Satanic Bible. They had all those Time Life books back in the day about UFO phenomenon and stuff. And I remember seeing around her house, there was like, I don't know if you want to call them fetishes or whatever you want to call them, you know, little altars, candles, trinkets, things like that. And all that started coming back to me. And I'm like, these guys were messing around with something, and who knows what it was, for what reason. And it kind of like manifested itself and afflicted our family, because for years and years, it kind of just followed us around. And then there was the stuff that my mom was doing that I didn't really realize what she was doing, you know, but, you know, I can get into that in some other time if you want to have us back. But it's something that kind of sticks to you. And mm-hmm. I consider it negative energy, because everything is energy, right? And if you attract this negative energy and you allow it into your home, then of course it's going to haunt you. It's going to stay there with you. And I think that's what it's been all my life. It's just been this manifestation of this negative energy that has afflicted my family, which pretty much they're all gone. I'm the only one left. And now I have to carry that burden of knowing that these people did something that I can't undo. And that's why I write comics. That's why I try to express myself by writing stories and comics and telling stories and stuff like that.
It's kind of like the Freddy's New Nightmare, or Wes Craven's New Nightmare, where he's writing down the stories because it's something that's in his that's I don't know if it's haunting him or something that's causing him to, he needs to write it down to express it, because if not, then it's going to come to life.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. And it's weird, because if you don't get it out, if you don't say it, then it just kind of sits there and your mind just does whatever it will with it. And, you know, it manifests in some way, shape, or form, be it in the relationships that you have with people, be it in just having a bad day. But that energy sits there and it kind of takes over your life. It kind of affects you in that way, I think, anyway. That's my opinion.
So we kind of crossed the podcast with real life horror stories compared with the cryptonels.
that kind of always happens, right?
Yeah, only? Man, that's what you get with us. It's like I said, man. All these comics stories that we write, we draw, are inspired by life events, no?
Mm-hmm. As far as the comic, I don't know. We've actually gone into I think a lot of detail on some of these cryptids and monsters that we will be able to see in the book. Is there anything as far as anything more about the story that y'all want to talk about?
And just pick it up and check it out. It's unlike anything that's out right now in mainstream media or mainstream comics, I guess you could say. It's very, very different. There's nothing else like it out there, and I think it's because of the aspect, just the border horror aspect of it, because a lot of this stuff, if you don't live in this area, you might not get, but we try to describe that in a way where everybody can kind of, you know, it can be approachable. And so far we've gotten a lot of good reactions. And it's weird for me to say this, but we've never had anyone say something bad about the book, which is very, very strange to me. Because, of course, everybody has their criticisms, but no one's ever said anything bad about what we're doing as far as the book or the story is concerned. I don't know, Lee, have you ever heard anything?
No. Probably a typo here and there, but, I mean, that's easy to fix, right, for the... Mm-hmm. And that's what we did for the floppies, man. We mm-hmm. we went through everything with a fine tooth comb and ironed out the kinks, and like Ray said earlier, added more content, more pages, more just to make the story flow a little bit better, like from page to page, scene to scene, and also the dark light pages are in the back. And so yeah, for all those that back the book, and if you bought the floppies, you're gonna get a little bit extra from each issue.
A little bit of incentive to pick up the floppies. Right now we're on issue 2. Issue 3 should be
on August 30th.
Where are we? Yeah. August 30th. Yeah. Issue 3 is coming out at any of your finer local comic book stores. It is online as well. Go to the cryptonels.com and you can find the links so you can purchase it online if you don't have a comic book store near your area. But I'm sure you'll throw that in the description and stuff. But yeah, thecryptonals.com, and of course, you know, you can follow us, 6x6 Comics, follow Blacktooth Comics, which is our publisher. Thank you so much to Mr. Julian Lawler for publishing The Kryptonals, for getting it out there into Diamond. And of course, he has his book as well. It's called Emo Girl, and that is also, you can purchase that through Diamond as well. You can order it through your comic store.
And currently, issue 4 is up for pre-order. So go to your local comic shop. Ask for it by name, The Kryptonals. And if you don't have a shop, like Ray said, you can go to kryptonals.com and you can order it from there. It's a collection of links, like various comic shops that are carrying our book. So you can just pick and choose wherever you want to order your book from.
Mm-hmm. And not just nationally, it's also internationally. Mm-hmm. I've had people purchase it from Sweden and Japan, you know, and Germany, stuff like that. So you can get this book worldwide if you follow the links, and or if your comic book store is carrying it. And issue 3, like I said, is going to be hitting August this month.
Yeah, 30th.
And that issue is there you go. It's very near and dear to me because that's the Llorona story. That's the Llorona issue. It's very Llorona-centric, and that's the one that retells the story of the origin of La Llorona. And we add a little bit extra to that one as well, so you can really get the full, experience of what we're trying to tell or what we're trying to do with La Llorona. Because to me, anyway, that is kind of like our culture right there at the forefront. It's mm-hmm. one of the stories that we've grown up with. It's one of the things that that defines us as far as being Hispanic, being Latino, because everybody in some way, shape, or form has either heard of La Llorona or has a Llorona story. So there you go.
Yeah, no, definitely. And we need to have you all back again, because I'm pretty sure there's still a lot more stories that we can go through and different legends that we've either heard of or know somebody that's seen it. Personally, my family's seen, I'm from Mexico, they've told me stories that they've seen things. So yeah, I'd be more than happy to keep talking to you guys about this stuff.
Yes, definitely, man. I would love to come back. So especially once you're done reading the book, I want to know what you think, and you know, we can discuss it more at length. By that time, hopefully, like, more issues have come out. We're locked in for 7 issues of the Kryptonolds. So the book that you have is the complete version of it, but there's going to be a little bit extra for the floppies. If the book could be cut up, it would be 6 issues, but we've added a 7th issue for the floppies that is going to be a little bit more meat. It doesn't change the story at all, but it just adds a little bit more. A lot of scenes that were left kind of on the cutting room floor because we had, you know, Oli said I had already gone overboard. Yes. as far as how many pages were written, and a lot of stuff got left out. But it was more just, what would you call it? Like just meat, fluff? What would you call it?
No, I mean, what Ray was mentioning, that because we have to deliver by a certain time, right? Because it's crowdfunding books, and people get a little bit restless. Hey, where's my book? I mean, I gave you my money, and so where's the book? So we try to work on it and deliver as fast as possible. We usually take a year to complete the book because it's not a floppy, guys. It's like 140 pages, more or less, right?
Yeah.
So that was like the trades. Yeah, and when we launched the campaign, we had like over 40 pages done. So we needed the rest to be completed, and Darío, man, that level of the detail and quality that he pours into each page, it takes time. So yeah, and Ray will. I'm gonna throw you under the bus right now, Ray.
Go ahead.
He didn't finish the script. He was still writing it. So Darío was drawing it, and Ray was writing it at the same time. And so yeah, so that's not an ideal way to work on a book, because there are changes and the pacing could come out wrong, and then we were like at the finish line, and I told Ray, the last issue needs to be like 44 pages. That's the limit. You can't pass that number. And the thing is, Ray had so much story left to tell. So we're in the floppies. We thank God for the floppies, and that's how we're gonna fix some of those issues out, and it's gonna be badass.
Yeah, it's gonna be intense. And it wasn't just, you know, added stuff that I just wanted to throw in there. It was actually stuff that moved the story forward. Yeah. When Krypton Knows Volume 2 comes out, because there will be a Volume 2, it just kind of sets everything up for that. But it also gives you more of a feeling of the world that we've built as far as the book is concerned, as far as the characters and the situations and stuff. And, that's basically what it is. It's just world building so that you're fully immersed in the story that we're trying to present to you, and that you're committed to these characters. Because once you meet these characters, I'm hoping that you fall in love with them and you want to continue with their stories. You want to know where they go, you know, kind of like one of those things, like you watch a movie and they're like, is there more, you know, because they leave you kind of wanting more. And that's what we want. We want you to want more of these characters and more of their stories.
Yeah, I so far from what I've read, I recommend it. The like we already talking about the art style and all that. I think it was a perfect fit for the story itself. Mm-hmm. It gives a lot more. I don't know if it's ambiance or feeling. With it being dark, because it look even when it's color, you can still make it feel scary. But with the black and white, I don't know why it feels darker mm-hmm. when you're looking at it. And then just the style of the way that it's drawn, it's really interests. I think it'll pick up a lot of people just by the art style itself. And then of course the story.
We were trying to infuse a whole lot of like Junji Ito into it, like Gustave mm-hmm. Dore, you know, that type of horror. There was Bernie Wrightson, of course, you know, stuff like that. We were trying to get that that ambiance, that feeling across. So I'm hoping that's coming through with you.
Oh yeah, definitely. And like I said, we got once I finish this, we'll make sure to have you guys back at some point. Talk about either this or anything else in the future you all have, and we'll talk more scary stories. Because,
definitely, that's my job. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, man. I'm glad you're enjoying it. I just wanted to say also that it is being carried, which is something that I haven't really announced or haven't really talked about. It's being carried by Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. They have the Kryptonals there in store, really? And I was really like excited about that. And they're loving the book because I think they've ordered already up to issue 3. So if you guys live in Red Bank, go pick it up at Jay and Silent Bob's, where it's Kevin Smith's store.
Yeah, Kevin Smith is. I've never met him, but everything I see of him, he's a freaking awesome person. I actually just watched the Clerks 3, and I actually like the story. I know some people didn't like it, but I love the story. But yeah, definitely. And like I said, we'll have you guys back. You guys miss anything that we want to share to people to go listen? You just let me know as far as links and all that. I'll share it in the description. Any artwork you want me to share, I'll share it there so that our audience can hear it. And
thank you, sir.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. We went a little bit longer than we normally do, but you know it's a lot of good content here. So want to thank Ray, thank Oliver for joining us here, and thank all of y'all for staying with us, and just let us know what y'all think. If y'all get the comic book, just let us know what y'all think of the comic book.
Definitely. You look for us under Black Tooth Comics, look for us under 6x6 Comics, the Kryptonolds. Thank you so much, Selwood, for having us. We really, really appreciate it, and thank you for enjoying the book so far. Just follow us on all the social medias. Oliver?
6x6 Comics. We're everywhere like that. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, X. I mean, TikTok coming soon, and online shop coming soon too.
Awesome. Well, once again, thank you guys, and we'll see you guys next time here on Nerd from the Crypt.
Excelsior, guys.
Thank you. It's your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.